I'm David Delegater. Baseball fans love their sport. In the face of marketing and media assaults by the NFL and NBA, Major League Baseball continues to set attendance records. Seeing your team play on the road is as good an excuse to travel as anything a fan of America's pastime can conjure up. And it doesn't even have to be your team. My friend Jerry travels each year to a new Major League venue with four of his buddies. Even though he's a Yankee fan, it doesn't matter who he's watching. It's a spiritual process for them. But fans of baseball, they just want to see a game. Our guest today, Timothy Mullen, has written a travel guide, Baseball Road Trips, the Midwest and Great Lakes, that will enable you to pop in your car and be who you are, a baseball junkie. Tim Mullen, welcome to Around Cincinnati. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me, David.
Well, it's getting toward the end of the baseball season, but that doesn't affect the value of your book. It's a great thing that you did, Baseball Road Trips, the Midwest and Great Lakes. This is, in many ways, the place where baseball was born, and not just Cincinnati, but the whole Midwest has a long tradition of supporting baseball.
Most definitely. If I may interject something in nostalgia, my first baseball road trip was to Cincinnati. Well, I was one, and it was Crosley Field. And I have a picture of the trip because my family, we're from Indianapolis, and a big vacation for a big Catholic family of six kids was a trip to Cincinnati. I think there was an amusement park across the river, Coney Island.
Yeah, it's on the river.
Cincinnati Reds game.
Yeah, well, Crosley Field was an amazing place. Architecturally, you'd never see anything like that today.
Dad was very fond of that stadium, and when Riverfront came around, he was kind of head and hands about it because you went from this very comfortable area of the city and this architecture that he really appreciated to maybe something that became known as almost cookie cutter. I still have good memories of Riverfront Stadium, though.
Well, your book covers Ohio is as far east as it gets, and it goes as far west as Minnesota and Iowa and includes nine states, I believe. So there's a big geographical area here of places where people can go to see ball games. It's certainly not just major league teams.
Oh, no, not at all. We do everything from the wooden bat college leagues, which are getting bigger and bigger in the Midwest, all the way up to the major league ball clubs. And everything in between, the minor league experiences, not just in Ohio, but all over the Midwest, there are so many opportunities for people to get out there and see some really beautiful architecture, some old stadiums and some new stadiums that really will complement the person who really looks out for the design and the detail.
Well, could you talk about the minor leagues and the independent leagues a bit that are covered in this book? Because, you know, I think people are so involved in Major League Baseball and they don't necessarily think about going to a minor league game.
Thank you for that entree there, because I really tell people, if you want to find some of the best entertainment values in baseball, look to the independent leagues, look to the college wooden bat leagues, and the lower minor league levels. Because right now, if you look at Dayton has had 8 years worth of sellouts in a row, and there's a reason. Their family entertainment value is through the roof. Also, just right across the river, you have Florence and the Frontier League. The Frontier League is an independent league that is truly, these guys are really, this is their last chance. They may have been released by a major league ball club, and they're really putting their heart into it. They're getting paid. That's different from the Northwoods League, which is mainly Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois, and Michigan, where the kids are college kids, and they're all on the Baseball America prospect list for the top 500 players. And just this past year, they surpassed the Cape Cod League for attendance. They're going on their way up. You get all types of baseball in the Midwest, and the opportunities are out there to find it.
Wooden bat leagues. I don't think people are familiar with the concept very much after watching college games, but these are college kids going back with wooden bats, right?
This gives the kids the ability to show themselves in front of scouts, kids at the college level. It puts a wooden bat in their hand, and it also puts them in a more professional setting. These teams are run professionally. The Cape Cod League, in a lot of ways, has kept its innocence. People show up with their folding chairs, their lawn chairs, and they sit around the ballpark. In the Northwoods League, they're really becoming a professional league, and these are old stadiums that were abandoned throughout the 40s and 50s that used to have C and D level teams, but they're beautiful pieces of architecture. And, you know, what they do is they go in and they rehab these stadiums, make it an entertainment piece for the community. They'll play in front of 3,000 to 5,000 people a night, and the scouts can sit and see how these kids perform in front of a larger audience with wooden bats, and it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, could you explain to folks what the C and D level represents? Because that hasn't, those minor leagues haven't been around for a long time.
In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you could go around Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and all of them would have the secondary cities that were beyond the major league level. It wasn't always AAA through single A. You also had some B, C, and D level teams that were in order. B was the best, and D was the folks who were just trying to find their way in. But typically, good organizations like the Reds and the St. Louis Cardinals and Chicago White Sox at the time would have multiple teams throughout states as feeders to their affiliated programs. And these guys would work during the day, a typical job that would be from a sponsor team. Let's say they played in Decatur, Illinois. A local foundry would hire them during the day, and they played ball at night. And then when they had to travel, they traveled. But that was the way it was. That was recruiting back in the old days. Now with the sophistication of recruiting and scouting analysis, they really have gotten away from that model. And they really have control over that A through AAA level system. But B, C, and D was a little more romantic back in the day.
You've been to all these ballparks. You've eaten all the food. Doing all that driving, a game only takes till it's over, you know, 3-4 hours maybe. I really enjoyed side trips that you talked about. Could you mention some of those and talk about them and why they were included?
Well, I included them because it's much more than the game itself. Going to a stadium is one thing, but there's so much history in the Midwest and the Great Lakes area when it comes to the characters of baseball. And sometimes I integrate literature into it because I love reading books. And I focused on a trip through the Mississippi River from southern Illinois all the way up to almost Minnesota, that integrated towns that Mark Twain mentions in many of his books. What's interesting is that a lot of those towns have places where you can go where something happened in baseball history. Because Twain mentioned baseball many times in his writings and speeches, but also you get that feel, that Americana from southern Illinois, taking those routes all the way up the river to Minnesota. You get that feel. There's a reason why baseball grew when it hit the Midwest back in the late 1860s. It was a marching feeling that you could do anything, and baseball was that wide-open sport sold up to the rest of the country. I almost get spiritual about baseball because I view smaller stadiums as small chapels and the large stadiums as cathedrals. I think there was mentioned in the movie Bull Durham by the character Annie that baseball has the same amount of stitches as a rosary has beads. I think there's some reason for that.
One last question. If I had to have three meals in ballparks, what was the best road food you had?
I'm a sentimentalist, and to be honest with you, one of the three would be La Rosa's Pizza in Cincinnati. I absolutely love La Rosa's Pizza. It's purely out of sentimentality. The hot dogs, you'd be surprised. Some places where you would think they'd have really good hot dogs don't have the best hot dogs in the world. And in the towns in northern Ohio where they have large Polish communities, you can get pierogies at the ballpark. So I look for the smaller, more edible thing. And as time marches on, I can't handle those 4-pound hamburgers.
Well, we've been talking to Tim Mullen. Tim, thanks for being here with us today. Eat well and prosper.
Thank you very much.
Timothy Mullen's Baseball Road Trips, the Midwest and Great Lakes, is a decent guide to lodging, restaurants, local attractions, parking, the ballparks, the food and seating, as well as the history of dozens of major, minor, and independent league teams. They're all within driving distance from Cincinnati, and although I would seriously do my own research on local restaurants, Mullen's perspective on the ballparks themselves and side trips from small towns on the minor league circuit are highly useful. It's the end of the Reds season as they play out the string. That doesn't mean you can't follow the once and future stars. Like from the Dayton Dragons, the Reds affiliate in the Class A Midwest League, whose rival, the Cedar Rapids Colonels, played just 60 miles southeast of Dyersville, Iowa. I tell you this because in Dyersville is located the still geometrically perfect Zen Garden, the Field of Dreams. Hit the road, Jack. For Around Cincinnati, I'm David Delegater.